It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Welcome to Firearm Friday. I am Chris Dover, and this week we're going to be talking with a fairly new company in the firearm industry. We've got Todd here from SAR USA. But before we get to that, I'd like to take a minute to tell everybody out there about GunStreamer. GunStreamer is a pro firearm lifestyle, pro Second Amendment video hosting platform, and we post our stuff from the CloverTac channel over there, including these Firearm Friday podcasts. So jump on over there and check it out today. That is www.gunstreamer.com. All right, crew, help me welcome our guest this week. We've got Todd from SAR USA. How are you, Todd?
Hey, very good. How about yourself? Good morning.
Doing really well. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking with us this week. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Oh, no, so look forward to it. It's always fun to talk about a great product.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Before we get to the product, though, do you mind telling us a little bit about how maybe your background and how you found yourself in the company there with SAR USA?
Sure. I've been in the industry for many, many, many years, so I'm going to date myself a little bit. But I got into the industry in early 90s with Federal Cartridge Company. Learned a lot about ammunition for a number of years and started putting products out there. Federal was somewhat of a smaller player at the time, and we began to push the products out into all the retail outlets and grew the brand. From there, I went to work for Beretta USA, and I was one of the very first direct salespeople that Beretta had ever hired, and this was early, about the mid-90s, and it was a great experience working for the Italians, and they had a great product, and they were, again, trying to grow their brand in the United States, and had a great time working with them. Moved on from there to work for Remington Arms Company.
Wow.
Had a big piece of business there, and really enjoyed working for Remington. This is back when Remington was still just a sole brand. Mm-hmm. From there, I went on to work for the Germans and work for Zeiss Optics USA and help run that company in the United States. Learned a lot about how to interface and grow products with a great engineering brand, but definitely has some communication challenges and some challenges because the products were quite different. And then I ended up talking to these gentlemen at SAR's Lamaze, and they wanted to put their brand out here in the United States as SAR USA. They've been bringing their product in for many, many years as different brands are being imported by different people, and they wanted someone that had a deep-rooted background in the United States. Mm-hmm. And knew how to grab a brand. So here we are.
Yeah, with the experience you've got, that's pretty cool. I mean, you've been around the block with companies in the industry.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the industry, loved the industry, been a gun enthusiast ever since I got out of college, and just really focused on trying to help people grow their brands and get awareness. And SAR's Lamaze is no different. SAR USA, it's a phenomenal company that a lot of people have never heard about. Again, they've been bringing products in to the United States for over, I think, about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. But they've never been branded as SAR USA.
Yeah. Now, with your personal background, before you got out of college, you started that awesome career, within the industry. Were you sort of a gun person before then, hunting or competition or just blinking and that sort of thing? Were firearms a part of your life before then?
I mean, I used to go out and just target shoot with my dad. We didn't really do a lot of hunting because we lived in Irving or in outside of Dallas in the mm-hmm. city.
Right.
But he did grow up in the country, and we'd go see my grandparents and ride horses and shoot guns. Didn't have that many opportunities to hunt. We just didn't have the places to hunt.
Gotcha.
But when I got out of college and became a salesman and got out on the road, I had a need for a handgun for protection. And I always had an infatuation with the firearms industry. So I bought my first gun, which was a Browning High Power, which I still have.
Oh, there you go.
That's and at that point in time, I kind of became a gun enthusiast and then got into the industry and have never looked back.
Right. Now, with dealing, you said, with the Germans and Italians before, did that help kind of help prepare you with what you were going to be dealing with Sarlazmaz and dealing with overseas companies?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you have a different culture and you have different markets that you have to work within, you know, you always think, oh, my market's the most important market, and that may or may not necessarily be true. So you just have to make sure that you over-communicate. Sometimes things are a little slower, you know, to happen, which is just something that you have to deal with when it comes to dealing with a parent company that's overseas. So far, the factory in Sarsenwa has been extremely responsive, and we've done a lot of work in the last 6 months. I came on in January right before the SHOT Show, and there was a good foundation here, but they just needed a lot more detail when it came to the American markets, how we sell the products in the United States, how we market the products in the United States, what products to bring in, for example. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you look at a product that they manufacture in Europe or overseas, and you'll look at it and it doesn't look American. It has graphics on it that look a little strange, or there's design pieces on it that just don't look very appropriate to the United States. So it's not very hard to say, hey, look, you need to make these subtle changes, but someone has to see that and tell them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Gotcha. Now let's kick it in and talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the company. As far as the relationship between Sarlazmaz, I know in the past Sarlazmaz has dealt with a couple of other, I guess, importers is what you would call it. But from SAR USA standpoint and Sarlazmaz, how is that set up for those that are not familiar with, like, the importation process?
Well, Sarlazmaz is a privately owned company in Turkey, and they're a very large manufacturer to the military, the police, and to the NATO countries. They haven't been real well established in the United States, and they have brought in products under different importers. And about a year and a half ago, they decided to start SAR USA, which is basically an entity or a leg of the factory or an arm of the factory. It is all owned by the family in one way, shape, or another. So SAR USA is really more like a parent-child relationship. So it is a direct link to the factory in Turkey.
Okay. Now, with SAR USA, does SAR USA have the capability to deal with other companies as well, or is there the contractual issues where you just do the importation and dealing with Sarlazmaz?
No, SAR USA is its own entity in the United States, and we're the sole importer of the Sarlazmaz product, which is quite more vast than what we currently bring in, and I'm working on trying to bring in additional variants of the current products as well as some new products. They even make shotguns, and we'd love to bring in some of the shotguns. Mm-hmm. So we're working on bringing in a number of products and growing the brand significantly over the next couple of years.
Right. Awesome. So how long do you know how long Sarlazmaz has actually been around?
Yeah, Sarlazmaz was founded in 1880, so it's almost 140 years old.
Wow.
And I always joke about it's probably one of the finest companies I've ever seen that people know very little about. It's mainly because they've done the majority of their business in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And as Turkey has begun to grow in their industrial growth and become more of a producer to many more countries, I think it just makes more sense to expand the brand in the United States as SAR USA versus some other brand. Because Sarlazmaz is the one of the biggest producers of military products, aviation products, and small arms to a vast part of the country or the world that we other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. With Turkey, it seems to me that, you know, you see a lot of stuff that's coming out of Turkey nowadays. Do you have any insight on that? Is it an industrial where, you know, there's like been an industrial boom there or something, or is that something that has kind of happened for a long time with turkey? It's just more people are becoming more aware of it now. Do you have any insight on what the deal is with that?
Well, I do believe that there's been a little bit of an industrial revolution in turkey, but I can speak specifically to the fact that I went over and visited their facility. Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the most modern facilities I've ever visited. I've visited quite a few of the ammunition and small arms manufacturers here in the United States, as well as many, many, many catalog and logistics companies. And their facility there was probably one of the nicest I've ever seen. Their small arms facility is about 700,000 square foot, about 400,000 square foot, actually under roof or climate controlled.
Wow.
And their machinery was state of the art. I mean, they have 11 axis milling machines, which just blew my mind. And you could probably eat off the floor almost anywhere in that facility. So they've definitely done a lot of the right things. And I think the quality of products that are coming out of turkey is probably why people notice a little more about, oh, it's made in turkey. And it's mainly because of modern engineering and modern machinery.
Right. And I think for a long time that perception, you know, has been, you know, and I don't know, turkey is just one of those things that, I don't know, I think people feel that it's inferior. I mean, it's good to hear that, you know, they're set up and you talk about that, because I think that there's this misconception, I think, still today. I mean, there's a lot of people that have it, that all that stuff is inferior because it's, you know, it's just rudimentary tools and you know, it's not state of the art. So that's interesting. Now, as far as the input that they get from you guys at SAR and the U.S. SAR USA and the U.S. market, do you guys have input on, well, you know, this particular product maybe is having this issue, and, you know, minor model changes or little tweaks or things like that? Is there any input in that parent-child relationship as far as that goes?
Yeah, they're very receptive to anything we can give them in terms of feedback or guidance from this market. One thing people don't understand is that there are different markets. I mean, in the United States, we use a standard here, and one of the examples we use is the spec on ammunition. It's called a SAMI spec. Mm-hmm. It's the industry standard for ammunition. Well, in Europe, a lot of the countries use a NATO spec, and NATO and SAMI are not necessarily the same thing. So when you talk about a 9x19 NATO round versus a 9mm Luger round, there are subtle differences in the two products. So when we begin to show them our market and the products that do well in our market, and we overlap them and what they're doing, they can fine tune those products, because sometimes they don't know the subtle differences. So we have to point those out. So our warranty center, as we get any inquiries or questions there, we try to relay all that information back to the factory, good, bad, or indifferent. And then we also try to keep up on trends. If we begin to see similar things happening with the products, we'll give them feedback, and maybe they can improve the process to make it stop, or improve the product, fine tune the product. And then the next step is to help them create products for this market. And that's a little longer term, but the platform of products they make is phenomenal. But then there's also the ability in this country to build variants off of those products. So, you know, in this country, Cerakoting is very popular, porting is very popular, competitive shooting is very popular. So people want all these neat little bells and whistles to go on the guns. And some of those bells and whistles we can do through the factory. And then we also try to spend a lot of time developing aftermarket companies to make those products for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know we do some work with Galloway Precision. I know you guys, I think you guys have worked with them a little bit, developing a few things for the SAR 9.
You know, Galloway Precision?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I just actually got a really beautiful picture. They've been working on some slides to lighten up the slides. They've got a number of different spring kits and trigger kits. And we've got a NRA show coming up, concealed carry show in Fort Worth here at the 1st of September. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to showcase that package. It would be a package that would be available through them. It wouldn't be a factory package, but it'd be like buy your SAR and then send it off and have it customized by Galloway.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a testament, I think, when you talk about the aftermarket stuff. I think that's sort of a testament when a company in their products are starting to become mainstream. You start seeing more and more of that aftermarket availability of parts. And that's a good thing. I mean, that kind of measures, I think, I guess that's maybe your opinion too, that kind of measures the success of a company in a way.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Everybody wants a pathway to the next product. So you don't want to buy the base model and stop. You want to buy the base model and then move up to the next model and then ultimately get to the race model or the pro model. And most factories, unless they have a pro, like a custom shop, they don't typically dwell in that. They find aftermarket companies that do it better than they do. And that's been the path I've taken. So I've been working with a number of sight companies to have different sight options for the guns, a number of different spring and trigger companies, talking with a few barrel companies, just to give everybody more options because the guns are growing at a pretty good clip right now. And the next thing people are going to ask for is, where do I get holsters? Where do I get sights? Where do I get grips? Where do I get customized parts? So we're working real hard to get a number of those things done, and we've done quite well. I mean, I think there's been like Galloway's done a lot of stuff. We've got three or four sight companies that I'm hoping to roll out in the next month or two. We have a number of holster companies, Red X Holsters and Tactical Measures, both make really nice holsters for the guns. So we're really pushing hard to try to get a lot of options out there for our user, because at the end of the day, it's all about the user experience, and the user is the ultimate person that pays the bills. So we want to make them as happy as we can.
Mm-hmm. Now, backing up a minute, you started talking about the barrels and the parts and stuff like that, and it got me to thinking with, you know, we get back into the manufacturing and it's in Turkey and all of that good stuff. As far as, you know, your knowledge and visiting there and seeing the facilities, another thing, one thing I didn't hear you mention, as far as the raw materials that are brought in and used, are we talking, I mean, is it industry standard? Do they really strive to use better materials or at least stuff on par?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to remember one of the things that you know, again, it's a very large company in Turkey. They have seven different factories.
Oh, wow.
They're the largest private supplier to all the NATO countries. So the standards they're using are the standards that would be used for the military or the police over here. So there's nowhere to cut a corner. I mean, they're going to use the best materials available to them for the job they're doing. So I think the main thing and the one standout thing I think that really makes them as good as anybody is the fact that they've invested millions and millions of dollars in the machinery. Mm-hmm. And the engineering. And, you know, you're not going to skimp on the materials at that point in time because that just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So the material side of the business is whatever the standard is for that particular part. I mean, every part has its own specification.
Sure.
But again, they're working toward a military or a police specification on almost everything they do.
Yeah, and I think that with a lot of people, they don't realize a lot of these raw materials, you know, they think about, you know, made in the USA is a big thing, right? And so I think a lot of people don't realize that made in the USA doesn't necessarily mean made in the USA as in all the raw materials come from the USA. A lot of this stuff comes from overseas anyway. So it's not that foreign of an idea that, you know, yeah, that it would be standard globally, I guess. With the military police aspect and everything else, you've talked about that and how that's been a big part of Solace Models for quite a few years. Is the U.S. their biggest civilian market?
Not currently, no. I mean, they're a very, very, very large company in Europe. So, mm-hmm. Europe and Asia. So, we're growing rapidly in the United States, and I think we will ultimately be one of the biggest markets for them. Mm-hmm. But they currently do a tremendous amount of business in, you know, I know the Italian police use their guns. The Turkish police obviously use their guns. And a number of the other NATO countries and police departments use them. So we haven't got into the police business or the military business in the United States, obviously. There's a lot of restrictions on that. But as far as markets go, this is a great market for us. They make an exceptionally good product. And I think when people, the general consensus is once people put the guns in their hands and they go, oh my goodness, this is a nice gun. It must be, you know, very expensive. And we're in the mid price points, you know, between $300 and $600 retail. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's kind of blown away.
Right. Well, what I meant by the civilian was the average citizen. Because I know that, you know, when you're dealing with a lot of other countries, you deal with a lot of, you know, firearm regulations, and, you know, a lot of other countries don't have the Second Amendment that we have, right? So, is that aspect, is that one of the reasons that they were looking at initially, you know, and years ago through other companies or whatever, bringing stuff into the U.S. was trying to tap into that, you know, actual, you know, citizen, whatever, civilian market?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this market's a big market because, you know, we do have a deep seated belief in the Second Amendment and the right to own arms. And again, they make a lot of different products, and we bring in a small line of those products in the United States. And the civilian market's going to be robust here, but one, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, though. There's a lot of competition in the United States as well because of that. Absolutely. So we've been a little, we've been trying to, you know, bring in products that are extremely high quality, good value, and then grow the markets organically, not manipulate the markets through, you know, real, you know, aggressive pricing. I mean, we're aggressively priced, but I mean, they could come in here and really upset the market, but I don't think they want to do that. I think the reality is the brand is very solid. The products are phenomenal. People put them in their hands and they love them. And we're going to grow, I think, at a much higher pace than most people at this point in time. But the market's competitive, and we just want to supply that market with a great product.
Yeah, and competition is a good thing sometimes.
I mean, absolutely.
Keeps you on your toes. It really pushes innovation and all of that sort of stuff. Now, I want to get into, you're talking about the different models and the ones, the, you know, the models that Sarlo's Maz currently has, and then the ones that you guys are importing, and I want to talk about that. But first, I need to take a break. We need to hear from our good buddy, Mr. Ken Blanchard. So take it away, Ken.
Hey, Chris. Hey, everybody. This is Reverend Ken Blanchard, also known as the Black Man with a Gun, from the Black Man with a Gun Show podcast. This week, I'm going to share a little history on how the man has been keeping us down, both black and white, using money. Yeah. Did you know that one way of ensuring that black people and poor whites could not own firearms was in the sale of them? Banning certain weapons and prohibiting the sale of cheap handguns did keep firearms out of the hands of the poor people. Small pistols selling for as little as 50 cents or 60 cents even became available in 1870 and 1880. That's after the Civil War. Since recently emancipated Americans and poor whites could afford them, these guns constituted a significant threat to the Southern establishment interested in maintaining the traditional class structure. In 1870, Tennessee, for example, banned selling all but the Army and Navy model handguns. Much more expensive, they were beyond the means of most working class people. In 1881, Arkansas enacted almost the same identical ban on the sale of cheap handguns, while in 1902, South Carolina banned the sale of handguns to all but sheriffs and their special deputies. In 1893 and 1907, Alabama and Texas, respectively, put handguns out of the reach of Africans and poor whites through heavy taxes and the sale of such weapons. Now let's bring it forward a little bit. Did you know that back in 1982, when Glock first came out, it was so inexpensive that folks wanted to classify it as a cheap gun to keep it out of the hands of folks that can afford it? Yeah, they've been persecuting you and me for a long time, and they got good at it. Well, that's a little bit of history. If you like what you heard, tell Chris and check me out. And this is your friend and brother from another mother, Ken Blanchard, from the Black Man with a Gun Show podcast, the best that ever did it and got away with it. Check me out and get our free app at blackmanwithagun.org. Back to you, Chris.
All right, thank you for that message, Ken. We are back with Todd from Sorry USA. And before we left there, we were going to talk about, just for a minute, I'm curious, because you look at the Sarla's Moz, let's say, website, and then you go to Sorry USA, and you guys have a few, but not nearly everything that, obviously, that Sarla's Moz offers. So with being able to get those models that Sarla's Moz makes and be able to, whether it's compliance or regulation, how does all that work as far as getting all that into the U.S., into the U.S. market?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of paperwork that you have to fill out. You have to make sure that they're okay to import. Certain products you can't bring in, and then you have to go to the State Department and get them all registered and or approved, and then get an import license, and that all takes time. So I came on board in January, and we have roughly 8 models, 10 models of product. And we've shown a number of products at the SHOT Show and the NRA shows of these new products that we are planning to bring in. And we hope to get a number of these newer products or the newer models into the United States by the end of the year. So it's just a process. It just takes a little time. You have a number of different legalities that you have to fill out, and it's not something that you can speed up. It just takes time.
All of the red tape, I guess what you're saying, they don't make it easy.
Well, it's just, yeah, it's not so much easy, it just takes time. It just, you know you have to go from A to B to C to D to F to Q. Mm-hmm. And it's not a very hard process. It just takes time, and each hurdle has to be cleared before you can go to the next hurdle.
And I got to think that's kind of frustrating for you guys a little bit, especially when you go to these shows. And I'm thinking about my experience with SHOT Show and NRA and being in the SAR, the SAR USA booth, and there is Sarla's Moz stuff in the SAR USA booth that SAR USA doesn't have in yet. That is really cool stuff, and a couple come to mind, like the SR 38 or the P8L, and we'll get into models and stuff here in a little bit, and I'm sure you're familiar with both of those, but it's kind of frustrating for me, because I'm like, okay, those are really cool, and I'd like to see those, but it's like, we're working on them, we're trying to get them in here, but it takes time. And I'm sure that with you've got people that are seeing those and people that are interested in those, and then for you guys having to go through that long drawn out process that just takes time, it gets frustrating sometimes.
Oh, yeah, and my heart and soul is a salesman, so anytime someone wants to buy something, I want to sell it to them. And sometimes I'm frustrated by, why are we showing this? We don't have it yet, but then you have to create some market demand. And I think, again, I started just this year, and I think I'm going to get a little better about timing. So when we show something, we'll have some better idea that once we start the process, it'll take X months. Because even at the SHOT Show, when we were showing products, we thought we'd have products in by this time. A lot of things have happened between now and the SHOT Show, and we've made a lot of progress, but we haven't got those products there were a number of those products that we were showing in yet. But I do have, I feel like I have a lot better control over that process now. And other than just the slowness of it and the meticulousness of it, I believe we will have a lot of these products in. In the next couple months, I'm hoping. I've put in a forecast and orders to the factory, so that's how much confidence I have we're going to have them. But until they arrive on the docks here, I can't definitively say anything other than we're working on it.
Right. Yeah, I know that prior, you said you came in around January, and I know that prior to that, it seemed like about the only thing that's SAR USA was able to get in was that SAR 9 and then maybe like the K-45, only just a couple. And that was really frustrating. But since you've come on, and in that time in the last couple of years, it's actually expanded to quite a few different models. And I want to get into those models here shortly.
Yeah. And again, we want to even grow into some of they have some beautiful shotguns. I'd like to bring the shotguns in too.
Yeah, and some of those, particularly some of the, what am I thinking? Some of your field, like hunting shotgun, bird guns, field guns, that are coming out of Turkey. I don't know if Sarlo's Maz, I haven't looked lately at anything like that over at Sarlo's Maz, but I think they do have some stuff like that, don't they?
Oh, yeah. They've got a beautiful inertia semi-automatic shotgun. They've got a gorgeous gas-operated shotgun, a semi-automatic shotgun. And they've got the over-unders are really nice. So they all hit really nice price points. Haven't got final pricing on everything, so I don't want to get into that. But as everything in the line so far, what we try to achieve is bring in an extremely high-quality product, price it in the marketplace very aggressively, where the consumer feels like he got a value when he bought the product. Mm-hmm. And if we can accomplish that long-term, this brand will be here for a very long time, and they'll just continue to grow.
Well, let's jump into some of the products here. Let's talk about some of the things that SAR USA actually has, and if there's people out there interested, obviously they can go check out SARUSA.com and look at some of this stuff. The flagship, I'm guessing, is going to be that SAR 9, correct?
Well, it's the latest. It's the latest model, and it's the product that was picked up by the Turkish Army. It was also torture tested to over 50,000 rounds. It was a modern design. The engineers in Turkey, what they basically did is they went and looked at the marketplace, and they looked at all the products that were out there. They tested them. They looked at what they liked about products. They looked at what they didn't like about products. And they started kind of designing around the products, the pieces and parts that they liked, and tried to eliminate the things that they didn't like. And if you look at the SAR 9, you'll go, oh, wow, that feature looks like this product, or, oh, that looks like this, or that looks like this. But there's only so many things you can do when you design a new firearm. And what they try to do is take kind of the best of all of the products that were out there, put them all into one package, build out a great product. They tested it rigorously. I believe it was one of the only guns that passed the tests over there, and that's one reason that it's in the Turkish military. And the Turkish military is not small. It's the second largest NATO force. So that gun is kind of, like you said, the flagship right now, and it's getting the most attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, people have this perception that, you know, it's really new. And, you know, you talk about the military contracts, you talk about the other stuff. How old is the basic, I guess? There's probably been some upgrades and stuff done to it over time, but how old is the basic concept or design of that SAR 9?
Well, all I know for a fact is they started bringing the product into the United States about mid last year, early to mid last year. I don't know what the development cycle was in Turkey prior to that and when it was actually adopted by the military, but I believe it was the previous year. So the product's been on the market, I think, approximately, if I were to take a shot at this, about 3 years.
Okay, I got you. And I know that there's a couple of different variations with that SAR 9, correct? There's like a safety model and a manual safety, one without a manual safety. Am I right with that?
Yeah, the initial guns that were brought into the United States had a frame safety as well as the trigger safety, mm-hmm. And we've made kind of a running change to there was mixed reviews on the frame safety, but the vast majority of people didn't really use it or didn't really want it. It kind of got in the way, so we've transitioned a little bit more into bringing more of the standard product that's used everywhere else. And it doesn't have the frame safety. But we have also, you know, kind of developed a little bit of a demand for that gun with the frame safety. So my plan is to continue bringing it in, maybe not on a continuous supply chain, but order it a couple times a year to make sure that we have stock.
Right.
So the standard product everywhere else in the world is the product that has the trigger safety without the frame safety, and that will be our primary product. But like I said, we'll probably continue to bring in, based on the demand, the gun with the frame safety. Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I mean, I think that when you've got talking about a striker-fired pistol, frame safety is you know, or manual safety is kind of a that's kind of a foreign concept in a way with a striker fired pistol. Most everybody is, you know, every manufacturer out there has gone with like the passive safeties, I guess would be a better word for that, the trigger safeties and things like that. But you still have those people out there, whether they're carrying or they're unsure or maybe they're new to shooting or something like that, and they just feel safer for whatever reason having that manual safety. So, you know, I get what you're saying. You got to have a few around to cater to everybody. And the salesman in you, you talked about that earlier. You certainly want to have something to sell everybody regardless of what they want.
Correct. Yeah, and then you got old guys like me that just grew up on Colts and like the frame safety.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, moving along to some of the other ones, like I said, the SAR-9 seems to be, you know, most of the buzz and getting most of the traffic. But, you know, there's some other stuff in the lineup that I think is really impressive. Other than the SAR-9, what would be the one that seems to get the most oohs and ahs and people seem to be picking up and enjoying?
Well, again, the line's fairly small, but right now the hottest gun we've had is the K245, which is a steel constructed frame and slide. And it's just a beautiful hammer fire, single double, 45 that is just drop dead, you know, for the money is phenomenal. It's going to retail in that $400 range, $450 range. But it's just a great value, adjustable sights. It's got the accessory rail for a flashlight or accessories on the bottom of the frame. And it's just a phenomenal product, and we've kind of seen quite a bit of an increase in sales on that. And it might be because it's just new, but mm-hmm. It seems to have really kind of taken off.
Now, you guys, I'm looking on the SAR USA site now. Are you guys currently offering that K245 in the compact as well?
Well, I listed the compact because I thought we were going to get some in on our last shipment, and we didn't. They are definitely on order to come in because that's the next evolution. People want the compact version of that gun. So I hope to have those in sometime this fall.
I got you. Now, you know, speaking of compacts, you know, and going back to something like, say, the SAR-9, is there any buzz, any thought, anything going around about a compact version one day of that?
Absolutely.
So I think that could go over well. You know how today's market, and it depends on, I guess, the market that you're actually shooting for. Because, you know, you've got people that have their range toys. You've got people that, you know, everyday carry. You've got people that shoot competition and every level of in between. But as far as the carry thing, we see a lot of the smaller is better, you know, attitude. And with something like the SAR-9, I think the compact would go over well. I don't know, you know, again, we get into manufacturing and what those design changes would entail and how all that would work, and that's way above my pay grade. I'm not going to guess on it.
No, they're way down that path. I actually saw some prototypes when I was over in Turkey earlier this year, and I think it's just a matter of time.
Right. Now, as far as other things, and again, there may be stuff, of course, listed here. That it's good to let people know that, yes, there may be available. We're working on them, whatever. As far as the B6, those are some really nice pistols, kind of CZ-ish in nature. One thing I really like about those, I like the way the grip is on those. It's got that really deep cut in the grip, which I really like personally. So I think that's a very stylish pistol. Is that something that y'all are currently bringing in, or is that in the works as well?
Yeah, the B6 has been around for a little bit longer than the SAR-9, so it's been brought in under different names, and that product still continues to do quite well. The B6 is, you know, it's a hammer fire gun, polymer frame, very, very, very reliable gun. That gun is actually, I believe, it's used by the Italian police, and it comes in a compact version that is very nice, comfortable. It's not a micro or a mini. It's a very nice compact version that's easy to carry. It's very slim, and the gun retails for under $300.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very, they're very nice, and that's good to know that the compact is out there. Do you know if there's much of a difference design wise between the full size and the compact, other than a shorter barrel and obviously things that are gonna fall into play with that?
No, for what I've seen, the majority of the parts and pieces, obviously with the exception of the magazine and the barrels, because they're both shorter, the guts of the gun and the frame are pretty much the same. Again, I'm not a gunsmith, so there may be some springs or some things like that that are – there's some nuances. But, you know, the compact version, they, just like anything, they're going to try to use as many universal parts as they possibly can. And the frame itself – I mean, the frame itself is polymer, so they're going to use the same molds. They're just going to change the height of the mag, the magwell.
Okay, gotcha. Moving down the list, the CM9. That's another interesting little pistol for sure. That is obviously, you know, looking at it, that's going to be a compact. Is that something currently available, or is it in the works?
CM9s are available. It's probably one of my favorite pistols to shoot. Very comfortable. The gun feels great. It's just got a lot of features on it. hammer fire gun again. It's got a real nice deep beaver tail on the frame. You know, got the accessory rail, adjustable sights. Just a nice gun. Just looks good. It's got front slide serrations to make it easier to cock. Mm-hmm. It's more of a traditional, you know, cocked and locked, you know, hammer fire gun. But it just shoots nice. It just, the recovery time on it's really nice. All the guns shoot really well. I mean, that's something else that people buy these guns and they'll put them in vices and shoot them, and they're like, man, they're really accurate. Is it a match grade barrel? And you're like, no, it's just they you know, they're machining these guns on these multi-million dollar CNC machines,
right.
And the quality and the tolerances are just incredible. And people just don't realize it until they get them in their hands.
Right. And I guess they do. They do turnkey at the factory. I mean, so they're turning their barrels and basically building out of blanks or stock material, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, one of the funnier things that you just observe when you're there. But I mean, they had five hand engraving tables there. They had five guys that would just sit and do hand engraving. That's how large this company was, and I was shocked. They weren't all working at the time I was there, but there was two of them there working, and they ended up bringing me we had a meeting, and they ended up bringing me one of the slides that they had done for the SHOT Show, and it was just unbelievable. The artwork was just unbelievable.
Now, do they, curious about that, I want to jump onto that for a second since you mentioned it. Do these hand engravers, do they work off of patterns to put out similar stuff, or do they just pre-flow everything?
No, the ones I was, the hand engravers that were there when I was there, they would have a blank, a piece of paper that looked like the slide that was five or six times the size of the slide, mm-hmm. And they would draw it almost like a tattoo artist would, and they would draw it on this piece of paper, and they said it would take them anywhere from 3 to 5 days to draw out the artwork.
Wow!
And then they would go over to the table and start engraving that by hand with the hammers and the chisels, and they said they took another 3 to 5 days to do that. So they were literally works of art. They were just gorgeous.
That's a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
In a fire. Wow. And I'm guessing they're doing that probably with the over-under shotguns and things like that too, right?
Yeah. I was seeing it all on the handguns, which was really interesting because it really changed the look of the products. But I'm sure they do it on everything. I mean, they had robotic machines making the wood for the stocks for the shotguns and the sanders, and you know, it was all robotic and all the metal stuff CNC. So it was, again, I don't mean to beat it to death, but the facility was such a state-of-the-art facility. I was impressed, and mm-hmm. I've been in this almost 30 years, and I've seen a lot of factories, and I think that's a testament to when you pick the gun up and you look at it, you're like, wow, this is really a high quality product. I've never, you know, I haven't heard of this brand, but I think in the next couple of years you're going to hear the brand.
And that's where, you know, that's where it's good to talk to you like we did at the start of the show today and kind of get your background and your experience, because, you know, having somebody that's telling you that, that's green, you know, that maybe worked in accounting in an office building and then found themselves in marketing or something with a firearms company telling you that, oh, it's state of the art, it's this awesome facility, and then having somebody like you that's got that diversity over the years of being with multiple companies in the industry and all of that. It holds a lot more weight. I mean, it really speaks to, and you can hear it when you talk about it, you know, how that's, you know, just how advanced their machinery and that stuff is. Go ahead. I'll let you go.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I thank you for that. One of the reasons that I'm here and I'm helping these people develop this brand is because I've seen the products. If they were bringing in products that I didn't particularly care for or like, now I'm not saying I like every product I've ever sold in my career, but when you look at the quality of the product and the line itself and the people themselves, it's a family owned business, and I deal directly with the people that own the factory. And I can't get in a better position to make changes within the company than that. And that's what sold me, was the ability to have a direct source to the people that could make things happen, number one. Number two, the existing product line that they already had was phenomenal, in my opinion. And the price points were very, very good. And then the ability to bring new products to market and expand this line. I mean, that's exciting stuff.
Now, you mentioned, and we never really hit on this, but I know we've talked privately about it, but with that communication line and back and forth, how difficult of a process is that? I mean, you're used to it, obviously, having to do it previously and that sort of stuff, but how difficult of a task sometimes with language barriers or time zones or stuff like that?
Well, obviously, the time zones are always a challenge. But you just overcome those through email or the communication process. The gentleman that is part of the family member that owns SAR USA is obviously fluent in English, was educated in this country. So he comes over every other month or so just to check on progress, and we sit down and lay out objectives. But, you know, that part of it's not hard. And their trust in me to make things happen and run the company is probably another reason why this is so exciting, because I've been doing this for a long time, and I feel like I know what I need to do. And in many cases, the company itself is the biggest barrier for you to succeed. And here, that's really, at least from vision and direction, it's me. And execution is them. And sometimes that is a little slower than I would like. But I think it's improving every day. And ultimately, if I give them good advice and I give them good timing and communicate with them on planning, this thing will just grow very rapidly.
Now, I want to jump back into the products a little bit before we kind of got off track there. We were talking about that CM9, and I'm looking at the two compact offerings that you currently offer. You said that the K2 is coming, but are the CM9 and the BC6. Now, I noticed that CM9, just looking again for everybody out there that might be listening, is SARUSA.com. Go check that stuff out, and you can kind of look as you listen. You can kind of look at what we're talking about. But the CM9, the rear sights being adjustable and everything, it looks like on that CM9 is really an intriguing concept for a compact pistol.
Yeah, it's just they put the adjustable sights on it, and some people don't like them, but. I like the adjustable sights. They work very well for me. But again, I'm working with a number of aftermarket sight companies just to give everybody options on all the guns, from the SAR-9, the B6, and the CM-9, or the 3 that we started with. We've got a number of the sight companies manufacturing everything from, optical ready to night sights to quick acquisition sights. So we've got a number of different things. We're going to try to roll some of these out at the NRA show. I'm hoping we can have some prototypes there so people can see the products, and then we can start pushing those products to those people to those manufacturers for those products.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there's people out there listening and they're hearing us talk about this, and they're looking for a compact option between that, because they're fairly similar, being size-wise, being hammer-fired, all of that. If they're kind of back and forth between that BC6 and the CM9, which would be Todd's choice? Which would be your choice if you were looking for a compact?
The CM9 is going to be a little bit of a wider frame, so I have a bigger hand, so that really, really is good for me. And they do have backstrap adjustments on the CM9, so you can even make it bigger or smaller. Oh, wow. The B6 is a little more of a thinner grip, so it's a little more comfortable to shoot for almost all shooters. Again, I've got fairly large hands, so it's I prefer the CM9 just from a comfort of shooting. But the vast majority of all shooters that I've talked to probably like the B6.
Yeah,
it's a little more slender, a little more comfortable. in that respect. But the guns, again, from a second shot acquisition, they don't have a lot of jump to them. The ergonomics are really nice on all the frames. If you look at them, they all have a real nice deep cut for your hand to fit up inside the gun. So you're right on axis, and you shoot really well. And the recovery time is exceptional on all the guns.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, moving into, before we get out of here today, moving into the ST series here, the ST9 and ST45, is that something that's available?
Yeah, the STs are available. It's an ST9 and a 45 and an ST9 and a 9. It's a little confusing, but it's just a striker fire gun, full size frame. Great shooting gun. Again, it's got the adjustable back strap, so you can change the dimension of the grips. Accessory rail, adjustable sights, serrations on the slide. It's got a really kind of a unique feature on the back of the gun. On the back of the slide, there's a striker button that you can see, and when it's loaded, there's a red dot, and when you fire the gun, the red dot disappears. So you can actually look at the gun and see that it's loaded. So it's kind of a nice little feature.
Okay. So what are some of the main differences, I guess, between that ST series and, let's say, the SAR-9?
Well, they're just different concepts. The ST9 was designed for interchangeability, so the slides could be changed from different calibers. So ST9, ST45, 40 caliber. The SAR-9 was built from the ground up to be robust and compete for military contracts. Okay. So they were designed differently from the ground up, off a clean sheet of paper. They are both striker fire guns, but they're internally different. And have different features on them.
Now, is the ST series an older series?
It's a little older. Yeah, obviously, the SAR-9 is the newest version of the striker fire.
Right. Okay. So the SAR-9, I mean, in a way, you could say, I guess, the SAR-9 was kind of an improvement, basically, to the ST-9. Instead of redesigning it, they just designed a whole new pistol, in a sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a redesign. It was a different concept from the beginning. I think they wanted to build a gun specific for duty. Right. And I think they saw some of the successes some of the other factories around the world had with a polymer frame gun, and decided to build that gun from the ground up, like I said, taking the best features of all the competitive products out there and, being honest with themselves and saying, hey, we like this or we don't like this, and building that gun kind of from the ground up.
Gotcha. Well, so I guess that'll probably do it for us, Todd. But before we get out of here, I want to give you an opportunity. Obviously, as we've been talking here, I've been looking at the SAR USA website. That's SARUSA.com. So hopefully for anybody out there listening, they've been doing the same and checking some of the stuff out as we're talking. But if people, have questions, want to see the products, that sort of thing, give your spiel. I mean, where can they look at that other than, is there any place other than SARUSA.com?
No, SARUSA.com. And we obviously have a Facebook page, SARUSA Official, and Instagram is SARUSA by SARZLMAZ. So you follow us on those platforms, and that's where we typically try to release the majority of our information, as well as the website. Mm-hmm. You can always reach us at 833-SAR-GUNS, which is our toll-free number. We'll try to respond to you as quickly as possible on that. There's also a contact us on the SAR USA platform. Okay. On the website. So we try to be as responsive as possible to inquiries. We're getting more and more dealers out there all across the United States. One of the things we're working on very diligently is a dealer locator on our website. Mm-hmm. But more and more people are carrying the products. So go out there and take a look at them. I think you'll be impressed.
And I know there's a lot of friends of ours that have been playing around with the SAR-9 over the last, year or so, maybe a little longer than that since it's come out. So just to put that out there for anybody listening, go check out, go over on Easiest Way. I hate to pigeonhole everybody into YouTube, but that's usually the easiest way to at least initially find some of these folks. But go check out Ghost Tactical, go check out The Gun Snob, also Armed and Feminine. I know they have done some reviews and some different stuff with that SAR-9, so good friends of ours. Go check them out, and that'll give you some information on the SAR-9. On some of this other stuff, I'm not real sure. I haven't seen a whole lot of people out there with you know, hands-on reviews or something like that. Do you know of anybody or any place, Todd, if somebody was looking for, let's say, something on the B6 or the CM9 or any of those? Are there any channels, influencers, things like that that come to mind where people could check out reviews?
I mean, most of the reviews, you can go to the, just when you go to the YouTube channels, you'll see, you'll Google B6, and there's a variety of different people that have, sure, have reviewed the guns. I don't push any one person over the other, so I just try to put the content out there and get the product out there to people so they can use it. But just like you said, there's a number of people out there that are influencers, and just you can find them on YouTube or Instagram.
Yeah. Well, those are all friends of mine, so I got the prerogative to be able to plug them a little bit. Todd, I want to thank you for joining us this week, buddy. It's been a great conversation. I've learned a lot about SAR USA and SARless Moz, and I highly encourage everybody to go check out all the cool stuff. Great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, thanks a lot.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.